This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
Hello and welcome to Empower the Spirit. My name is Doug Kelly. Good to have you. It is Sunday, July 24th, 2011. Empower the Spirit is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science as part of our regular church services. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit. And of course, we talk about metaphysical topics, practical life skills that are designed to enhance both spiritually and in life. You can always ask questions in the chat room for those who are listening to this program live. And tonight, we're going to be discussing past lives again. The topic is exploring past lives. We've got a special guest, Mike Voice, all the way from England. So we're going to be taking your questions. If you'd like to call in on this part of the program tonight, you can do that. Our John Hightower is going to be screening calls. The numbers are on your screen. 714-459-3973 is the number. And also following this program at the top of the hour, please stay with us for Dr. Vicki's Psychic Perspective with Dr. Vicki Hunter. She's going to be taking your calls, offering psychic and spiritual insights for your life, so you can call in with questions for her as well. So this week, I'm kind of excited, always interested in discussing new things and exploring things and trying to get to the bottom of them. So we're going to be talking about past lives. This is really a continuation of a program I did 3 or 4 weeks ago on reincarnation. And so we're going to get some different insights. And next week we'll also be following up with another program, but I'll tell you more about that toward the end. As I mentioned, we have special guests with us tonight, Mike Voice from England. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Doug. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, I'd just like to let everybody know that in England it's 2 a.m. in the morning, so Mike is absolutely crazy for being here.
Not at all. I'm enjoying it.
So, let's start with the beginning. Now, Mike, you are a former solicitor and teacher, and you've taught psychology and different things of that nature.
Yep.
And, of course, you have a book out named Edward, which chronicles your experiences with past lives, correct?
Yeah, that's it. It's about the life of Edward Stafford, who was 3rd Duke of Buckingham, and it's on a website which is Edward Stafford.
Well, that's, and of course, we'll be giving the link out. Hopefully, you'll have that handy where people can grab a copy of that and read it.
Yes, indeed.
That would be a good thing. So, let's start. You know, where did this all come from? I mean, here you are, you've got your law firm. You know, you're doing all this stuff. Where did the past life thing come? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I was probably under quite a bit of stress. But in any case, I was doing a project. The project needed a hypnotherapist to examine serious criminals, basically for parole, basically for research. We'd got major grant funder lined up. All I couldn't do myself was the hypnosis. So there I was with this hypnotist. And I put her under some pressure to show the methodology that was needed for the grant funder's referees. And I guess in self-defense, she pitched me a post-hypnotic suggestion, which I missed. And so, a dirty trick. And as I was driving home, it was a 200-mile journey. I was hit by this vision. But what I think she hadn't allowed for is that once I've got hold of something, I don't let it go. And I pursued it. And because it was remarkable, the journal notes I've made, eventually, when I retired from teaching and everything else, I published as a novel.
This hypnosis session, you were actually, you experienced a past life? Is that how it went?
Absolutely. That's it, precisely. You know, you've heard about reincarnation vaguely and read about it and so on, but I hate being hypnotized. I will not do it, and I hadn't gone in for past life regression at all. And in the end, of course, I've found myself doing it, doing the regression for myself.
Hmm. So you were doing your own hypnosis, essentially.
It wasn't really under hypnosis. I did it. I'm not so good at self-hypnosis either, for that matter. I did it pretty much consciously.
Hmm. So tell us about what you experienced with your past life experiences as you began this new path, if you will.
Well, to start off with, I really struggled to get very much. And I started with a list of names and some dates. And the dates were all in the 1400s. And one of the names, of course, was Edward Stafford. So I rang the Staffordshire County archivist, free historian, and I said, how about these? The other names weren't really recorded. It's that long ago. But Edward Stafford, of course, was. And all the information that I picked up checked out. So I kept going, I explored it more, and the door sort of opened. And I found myself straight away with a major historical event, which was the Buckingham Rebellion against Richard III. And obviously there's public records about what happened. Interesting thing was that the historians have one version of how Edward's father, the Duke, was captured, and my visions gave another. Yeah, exactly. So I thought, right, okay, everything else checks out, this doesn't. And I really need it to be spot on. And I was doing some research in a sort of local private library, and I came across a contemporary, you know, from the 1400s ballad, and it gave it just as I had seen it. So I thought, right. I'm getting somewhere.
That's good.
Yeah. So it sort of went on from there, really. And it revealed the life of this young prince. He was about 5 years old when the story started. And it's quite interesting, you know, how his maturing showed. It really was a difference from him at the start when he was five to him at where I stopped the novel, which is at the age of 19. You know, exactly as you would expect it to be. Different character.
That's interesting. So well, you obviously discovered some discrepancies in the history books, apparently.
Absolutely, yeah. There are about six things that professional historians ought to take notice of, but frankly, they don't. Since it starts off with Richard III and there's a great deal of interest both sides of the Atlantic about Richard III, what happened to the princes in the Tower, and so on. And you'd think historians would want to know. Now, they don't necessarily need to know what I have to say, but you'd think they'd want to know what the original documents say.
Right.
They don't.
Well, it'd be too much work, Mike.
Well, they'd have to undo, you know, sort of 20, 30 years of their careers, I guess, to admit they were wrong.
Wow. So how many of these visions did you engage in or get into?
I've no idea. It went on a daily basis for literally, 6 months.
Huh. So how did you begin these visions? What did you do? Did you have a particular process that you use to get them?
Well, I during the week at least, I was living on my own, so total quiet, and I would sit down, sometimes with a glass of whiskey and a cigarette, I have to say. I'd just meditate, I'd just take thought, and I'd have a pad of paper, and I'd note things down. I finished up with this, you know, extensive journal. And that's basic, you know, that's what I used for writing the book.
Wow, so you just took notes and...
Yeah. But I also had a very close friend who, she didn't work publicly as a medium, but she was. She was very, very good. And she got into it as well. And she would go into trance. I don't do that, but she would go into trance and I'd record what she said as well.
Interesting. So you came into this thing really not having any real position on reincarnation or past lives. So what's your, if you had to explain to somebody who had no position on reincarnation or past lives now, what would you tell them about reincarnation?
Well, there are several ways to approach this. Firstly, and I guess people go to hypnotherapists because they've got current life problems which need sorting out, and whatever the solution is to those problems, they will go for, and if it comes from a past life, so be it. There's a bookish way, of course. There are a lot of very, very good books on reincarnation. They're well worth reading, some of them. It's an old idea. It's a, what, 4,500 year old idea, really. So there are a number of ways. But what I would point out to people is this, that if you have had, say, 1,000 lives, and they've all affected you, and you only know what's happened to you in this life, then you've got a very, very blinkered view of yourself. You
right.
don't really know yourself.
Right. And that's one of my problems with reincarnation. It's one of the things that holds me back from buying into it wholly, is that what good are those previous lives if I don't remember anything?
Ah, well, the Celts allegedly did. You know, they would take out loans to be paid back in the next life, which I think shows a considerable degree of faith.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it could cause some upsets and confusions if we remembered too much, because we'd try to carry on living the past life, and that's not what we're supposed to be doing. But then, on the other hand, suppose you were Paganini in a previous life, and nobody tells you to pick up a fiddle. What a loss that would be, because the chances are you've got all these skills. You could again be a brilliant violinist.
Right. So how do you explain lack of memory equals lack of lesson?
I think things do change. For example, Edward Stafford was a very good horseman, and I am absolutely no good on horseback. They invented the internal combustion engine. It doesn't rock about. It is a good deal safer. You tend not to fall off. And I'm quite happy with the skill of driving, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but there are other things which really are useful, and I think you can bring these things back. On the my little show that I did yesterday, I had my wife come on, who is, again, current wife. She is a medium. And she said she brought forward Crown Green bowling from a past life and also archery. Well, okay, there's not a lot of money in that, but there's some satisfaction in winning cups and so on.
Sure.
Don't you think? Yeah.
Sure. Okay, so basically what you're telling me is that some of that information is there if you want to access it or try to access it.
Absolutely. Sometimes things will get thrown forward because of great emotional importance or stress or something of that sort. Generally speaking, I think you've got to go fishing for it.
Well, that would seem to be the case, because that's the only way that anybody seems to come up with any knowledge of prior lives. Let me ask you some questions from the chat room. I'm just looking them over. Vicky would like to know, what kind of sense did you have when the visions came? In other words, did your feelings or consciousness change when the material came to you?
This is sort of quite disturbing, really, because there's quite a bit of emotion in anybody's life. And if you get an emotional scene, it hits you emotionally. It's the emotion which is really important. And so if somebody's tried to kill you, for example, it would have left you a bit shaken at the time. It will leave you a bit shaken now.
Right. Well, obviously, if you have that kind of a experience.
Yeah.
So was it... did you feel a change in your psyche, so to speak, when these visions came?
Well, I was very, very keen to stay in control. You know, this is why I don't like hypnosis. So I stayed myself. But of course, you know, it is emotional. You are emotionally affected. I think if you're not careful and you're going through something really dreadful, it can pitch you into a bit of depression.
Well, sure. You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, just to go through a past life or to experience that kind of a thing and to have that subjective realization that, hey, this could have been real and I could have been there and it seems I was, you know, obviously can evoke emotions. Let's see. I'm looking at some other questions here. Question, did you have a precedent for Edward? I mean, did you have a passion for this particular era of history?
Well, absolutely not. Early Tudors, not much done. I mean, Henry VIII, maybe, yes. Certainly Elizabeth. But people aren't really interested in Henry VII. And most of this was in the reign of Henry VII. So I came across it very, very marginally at the age of about 13 or 14 in school and in history and paid it absolutely no attention. I mean, you wouldn't do, would you? It's all sort of thing that... really grabs you in the current life. I found out it probably should. I found it should. It's really affected history more than people realize. But, you know, you're not conscious of that.
Interesting. So there's really nothing. It's just like this Edward character just hit you. I mean, it just came through.
It was very important to me. One of the things I think is interesting about reincarnation is that we tend to come back in a group.
Really?
And there's quite a lot of work on this, and it's very good. And in fact, I talked to an expert about it at the time, somebody from the Society for Psychical Research, which has some outstanding people. And he took it very much as a matter of course. One of the things was that this hypnotist seemed to have a correspondence with Edward's lover. Now, I've got to say, I don't think she would be remotely interested in me, and I was not interested in her, not this time round, you know. But that made it very difficult to deal with her. Can you imagine? Because, you know, it was so embarrassing. You know, I have this strong, powerful vision of making love with someone who is very, very like you. But this is not good. Trust me, it's not good.
Yeah. Okay, then. Interesting. All right, so let me look at some other questions here. I'm not sure. Some of them are just statements. I'm just looking through the questions. I guess that's the end of it. If I missed any, just put them back in the chat room, folks. This thing with groups, though, people, you say that people tend to come back in groups.
Yeah.
And so the people in the group were all alive at the same time, by and large, and then they come back.
I think a loosely associated group. I mean, it could be a dozen, two dozen, three dozen people, some of whom you come across only slightly, some of whom have been recurringly very important. From Edward's life, I picked up my mother, my father, my daughter, my estranged girlfriend. I picked up quite a few people who were pretty close to me. The people who weren't so close is harder to pick up, of course.
So is there any validity to this idea where these groups of people end up seeking one another out?
I think it sort of does happen, yeah. I don't think it happens at the conscious level, but... the subconscious mind orchestrates our lives to such a degree.
Interesting. Okay. All right. One of the just trying to think of. In fact, I'm going to look over my notes from my program here. Let's talk about free will and reincarnation. Do we have to come back? Is there some sort of free will involved?
Well, this is my view. Others may disagree, but I think the reason why we come back is, yes, of course, to learn lessons. It's good for us. It gives us an understanding. But the thing that traps us here is attachment. We are attached even to places. But, I mean, it's something that human beings do. We're sticky. We pick up relationships with practically anything you can name. I mean, I even keep waste paper, frankly. But, you know, parting with somebody is so difficult, isn't it? And so I think that's what holds us here.
Is relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we come back to experience those?
Yeah.
Well, don't we have those relationships in that other realm?
Well, I guess we do, but I also guess it's going to be a bit different. I don't know that I can answer that question. It's just my feeling that we get stuck here. And, you know, for example, the taste of a fine wine, whatever, a good cigar, whatever. You know, there'll be appetite sorts of things. There will be all sorts of types of experience. I think we're just attached to being here.
So you think that we do have the free will to not come back, but we choose to come back, or we're just absolutely attached here and really don't have any choice?
I think there's got to be choice. I think life on Earth, and certainly human life on Earth, is about choice. I think that's what's remarkable about it, is that we do have choice.
Okay. And what's beyond that? Well, I mean, do we could just keep coming back here forever?
I think it's a bit like, I think it's a bit like playing a computer game. You know, you're addicted to it. You play it, you play it, and play it. Eventually, of course, you beat the game. When you've beaten the game, there's no longer any point in playing it.
Gotcha.
When you realize what's going on with life on Earth, then you may not need to come back. Although certainly the Buddhists have the idea that people who do realize what's going on and need not come back, do come back to help others. It's back to this attachment thing.
Okay. Here's a couple questions from the chat room from Kathy. Are you saying that you were once Edward, or that the knowledge and memories of Edward were projected through you?
May I say, I think that is a brilliant question, because I have struggled with that for literally years. It would have been so much easier for me if Edward Stafford had not been a prince, but he'd been, you know, Edward the Plowboy. Mm-hmm. That would have been fine. I would have been comfortable with that. I don't like the idea of, you know, the possibility of delusion, self-aggrandizement, all that stuff. I mean, for me, it's like fingernails on the blackboard. I don't like that. So I would rather not have been Edward. Now, there are a number of explanations which say, yeah, you're picking up something that was there, but needn't have been you. The thing that eventually persuades me I probably was, but still only probably, is the power of the emotions. I can't quite think that other people's emotions would have hit me so hard.
Okay. And here is, let's see, another question from Vicky. Do you think we each have a mission or desire to fulfill an accomplishment?
Well, the Buddhists say, you know, this word they have, dharma, that you have a purpose in life. And we must have reasons for being here. Otherwise, it's a mess. It can be bloody and painful, and if we don't have some profit from it, it would be better not to be here. So I'm sure every human being has got probably several, certainly at least one purpose.
Okay.
And important purpose.
Okay. Yeah, and a lot of people believe that too. Here's a question from John. Do you think our behavioral patterns stem from our past lives, or do we get to choose our behavioral patterns?
I think that's another good question, don't you? If you have habits, and we all have habits, why shouldn't you have habits from one life to another? I don't know. I think sometimes yes, sometimes no. If there's something profoundly emotional, I think you probably would bring that with you. If it's very superficial, then I'm sure you wouldn't.
Okay. And back to the question on fulfilling a mission or an accomplishment, could it take many lifetimes to fulfill the goal?
I think it normally does, to be honest. Isn't that depressing?
It depends.
Yeah. People sometimes speak of young souls, you know, people who maybe just lack a bit of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be very successful people, and they might be very intelligent, gifted, so on. But they haven't got the wisdom of ages. And you see other people at every station in life altogether, and you just know they've seen it all before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we call them old souls.
Exactly. And
it could be a kid.
Exactly, very much. And I think it must take great experience, many lives, to get to that stage.
Okay. So do you have any concept or idea or thoughts on where it all started?
Oh, gosh.
The first, you know, where did our consciousness originate?
How to give an answer which yeah. isn't a cliche or sound a bit pious. I mean, all life is part of God consciousness. We suppress that. We have our own little corner of awareness. But of course, you know, we're all part of that greatness. Yeah, you could say Adam, couldn't you? Adam Cadman, why not? You can say that, and I've no reason for disagreeing. You can take the evolutionary view, but I can't really quite believe that we've been here for millions of years. I think it probably is a shorter time than that.
All right. Another question from the chat room. Do you have any inclinings to other lifetimes as well? Especially since, Edward.
I hope this is amusing. I can remember between lives, walking through the garden of a stately home, and basically I was being offered this life, you know. And this would be somebody of some importance. I said, no. I'll be somebody ordinary, because I don't want to be somebody with a name and titles unless I can make a difference.
Right.
What a disappointment it would be if I, and I've had that experience too, I think, I've got some sort of position, but I do nothing with it.
Hmm. Okay.
And that's what I think would have happened. So I turned that down, and I became my ordinary and rather poor self.
All right, so you apparently have a mission of your own to accomplish. Is that true?
I guess possibly. It may be that a mission is correcting the historical mistakes that we have made and the course that history has taken as a result of what Edward Stafford did or rather didn't do.
Okay. Here's another question. Now, this is back to when you mentioned you were probably Edward. That's what your words, correct?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
So the question is, if you're not 100% sure that you were Edward, then how could it be indicative of reincarnation? They're confused, puzzled.
I think it's indicative. I think that I had these visions is evidence. I'm sorry, I'm going to put a lawyer's hat on here.
Okay.
I have attended many, many, many criminal trials at a reasonably high level. I have never heard any case proved beyond reasonable doubt. So much so that judges have given up saying to juries, proof beyond reasonable doubt. What they now say is, you must be certain so that you are sure. And,
okay.
And you see, proof is a belief state.
Mm-hmm.
There are people on the planet who believe that the world is flat, and it doesn't matter how many shots you show from space, they will say, sorry, the world is flat.
Well, it is, isn't it?
Well, exactly. Now, I can't absolutely say they're wrong. I can say there are indications that they're wrong.
I get
it. But I cannot say that it is a cast iron certainty.
Because you haven't been out in space to view the globe.
And even if I had, I could be deluded.
Well, it's probably that whiskey and smoke you were having.
Well, you see, exactly. And I've got to be careful here. I mean, I certainly want to offend nobody. But isn't this, to some extent, the creationists' argument when people present evidence of evolution? That, yes, that's a good argument. God intended us to think that. But it isn't so. And I don't think anyone has successfully answered that view yet.
So I appreciate what you're doing. I mean, you actually remind me a bit of me, because, you know, I need a compelling basis. I need a compelling argument, which is exactly why we're doing this program on reincarnation, because I'm looking, you know, I'm open-minded to it, but I just need something to lay my hat on, you know, to bite into in order to go there. And so I understand what you're saying. One of the things that comes up in my mind is that could easily explain past lives. There's two things. One of them is the Akashic Record,
yeah,
or universal consciousness. You know, that when we are into these meditative states or trance states, whatever, hypnosis, that we're dialed into the Akashic Record. We happen to access information on a deep level about a particular person. And to the point, and this would explain children, because children are often psychically adept as children and might be dialed into that Akashic Record and might be picking up information that they can't really obviously explain because they're too young, and it seems like a past life.
Yes.
So what do you think of that?
Well, the answer to that seems to me that why should people come up with the specifics that they come up with and not more generalized, in quotes, memories. And usually, I mean, an extraordinary life is exceptional. Usually the lives can be boring or even unpleasant. So why should people pick that up?
I don't know.
If it's a free choice, I would want to be Leonardo da Vinci, wouldn't you? You know?
Well, actually, that would have been cool, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I would like to be able to come up with the ideas that he came up with, or you know, anybody with great talent and skill, or secrets. Wouldn't it be nice to be them? Hey, then we'd be made. But we don't do that. We come up with all sorts of inconvenient lives.
Yeah, and I can't obviously answer why children or us or anybody would come up with a particular life. You know, it reminds me of how different people deal with stress, for example, differently. Some people will get migraines. Some people will get a neck ache. Some people will get, you know, sweat. Some other people will have asthma. Other people will have, you know, psoriasis. It just manifests, you know, in whatever way, for whatever reason. And so, you know, I don't know, but to me, that could, and I underline could, it could explain some of these past lives, and so forth. Another hypothesis that I have, that's not my original one, but it makes a lot of sense, is that a lot of times when we have these past life memories or visions or whatever, it's the mind's visual language of addressing some issue in the psyche. So it creates a scenario to explain it. But that would explain the verification, which
I think that's a strong potential criticism. I certainly took it so. This is why I consulted the Society for Psychical Research. When I thought, this person looks rather like somebody I know now, that person does, so does another person, then it makes you say, am I fantasizing? Am I projecting the personality of somebody I know? You know, as you do when you write a novel, you write about the people you know, and you give them fictional names and all the rest of it. So was I doing that? This very reassuring retired canon of the Church of England assured me not so, but they actually were. There actually were correspondences. But it's an open question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We might be projecting. I can't absolutely say we're not.
Right. And I appreciate that, you know, that groundedness. And what you're talking, when you mention that, you know, you look at somebody and you think, you know, I mean, I've talked about that on this program before, too. That happened with my wife and I. When I first met her here, I don't know, 14 years ago, whenever it was, I had this uncanny and never before nor since experience where I knew her, but I couldn't identify her. You know, I didn't. I had this unreal sense that I knew this person, but I didn't know her name. I didn't know. There was no history. There was no background. No memories to support that. Yet, it was unbelievably strong, and I've never experienced it with anyone else before or since. And I cannot explain that. You talk about the emotion. You know, it was deep. It wasn't, you know, you remind me of somebody. It was not like that. It was, I know this person, yet I have no memories to support knowing her.
Yeah. I think a lot of your listeners will recognize that. My present wife and I, very much the same as you've just described. I think that's really happens a lot.
Well, I think it probably does, too. In fact, my wife, Tracy, is pretty convinced that we spent this life finding each other, you know, searching for each other. I mean, there's a lot of events. I mean, I was born in Salt Lake City. No, I wasn't a Mormon. You know, I grew up halfway there, moved to Denver with my folks, grew up the rest of the way, ended up when I was 19 moving to South Dakota, the Black Hills, living there for, you know, the next 18 years or so, getting tired of the snow and the cold, deciding to move to Florida, and my wife at the time, she had family here in Florida, and I moved here, and that's where I met my present wife. Mm. And so, you know, and that was after a lot of stuff in the middle there, alcoholic relationships, all that kind of crap. I'm not going into that now, but the point is that a lot of things had to happen. And Tracy is not from the Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda area. She was born in Florida, but lived in Lakeland, and they ended up moving her here and for other reasons. So, I don't know. You know, I think, yeah, that was just random chance, but it was just uncanny. It was just uncanny.
Doug, do you believe in random chance?
Well, I believe that random chance, at this point, I believe that random chance can happen, yes. You know, you hear people say, well, everything happens for a reason. And I do subscribe to that to a degree as well. I mean, things that are meaningful, you know, they I think they do happen for a reason. Even if they're random, you can find meaning in them often.
Yes.
Why do you ask?
Well, my experience, and you know, from spiritualism generally, because yes, I've spent quite a bit of time in spiritualist churches and so forth. Everything suggests to me that the organizing power of spirit is absolutely beyond understanding, astonishing. They move us about a great deal more precisely than if we were chess pieces.
Right.
And, you know, they just organize things. It drops into place. I don't know if your listeners have come across this, but try it. If you need a car parking space and it's in a busy city and the spaces are improbable, you can use the word pray if you like, ask for a parking space. You'll be amazed how many times you get a parking space.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the law of attraction too, you know.
It is, and it just happens. Well, if that is so, if that is not just coincidence, and you can find it statistically significant if you want to check it out that way. The organizing power to bring it about is just phenomenal, and that's just to save you walking a bit or paying a car park charge.
I agree with you. I think there is something statistically significant with those kinds of things. I mean, it's the law of attraction. You know, it's you know, basically the universe brings you what you focus on in time. And I definitely believe in that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you another question in terms of accounting for all the souls. You know, at different times on Earth, for example, back in 1800, there was about 1 billion people alive on the Earth. Today, roughly 7 billion. The UN predicts 10 billion by 2075. Where are these additional souls coming from? Where were they back in 1800?
I don't have the figures for this. They are literally astronomical. But how many billion stars, a proportion, we don't quite know what proportion, with inhabitable planets are there in the universe?
Mm, good.
Yeah. I don't think there's any shortage of souls. I don't think there is. Plus, why should we suppose that life in a human body is the only intelligent life going on here? We know there are radio and television waves operating at different frequencies. You tune into this channel or that channel or the other channel. How do we know about any of the channels in which you can have sense experiences other than our own?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know that. Yeah.
Good point. And I'm glad to hear you say that because, you know, it would make sense that with the untold billions, trillions perhaps, civilizations that must exist in this universe, you know, it could all be organized that way. Do you have any I know we kind of touched on this, but do you have any knowledge of other past lives other than Edward and in between past lives?
Yes, I do. I think you probably only look at those that are either shoved under your nose or there's some reason for looking at. So I feel very sort of bad for not trying to do a thorough survey, but I can think of about half of a dozen. I just haven't had a reason to go into it more deeply than that.
Gotcha. So we kind of touched on this earlier in the show, but there's a question: not everyone returns, and you had mentioned that when there's nothing yet or nothing left to gain, like the video game, when you've completed all the levels, there's really no reason to come back other than if you want to help others or some reason like that. Is that about it? So,
As far as I can tell, from what I know myself, what people have said, what I've read, that is the consensus.
Okay. And any idea on what's next?
I think the whole business of being is to evolve. So the earthworm wishes to be the bird that eats the earthworm. And I think, well, yes. Yeah. And I think we want to rise to the level of angels and so on. I think it's hardwired in us to want to progress upwards, as it were, back to God.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your impression is to evolve back to God?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what we do. So once we leave the incarnate world, we will carry on evolving in spirit.
Cool. Well, if that's the case, I'm looking forward to it because I have a few words I need
no.
to have with God.
If I were God, I'd organize it differently.
Yeah. You know, one of these days you're going to hear on the news, yeah, God was assassinated by Doug. He finally made it.
Yes.
All right. What about animals? It kind of dovetails on what you were just mentioning. I mean, do animals also, are they incarnations and they're just evolving through the levels, so to speak?
I believe that's right. I think probably opinions vary on this, but you know, what really is so special about human beings? I mean, you can teach great apes to talk by using a keyboard. They haven't got the vocal cords to do it, but they can communicate. There are animals that use tools. It's reckoned that dolphins are brighter than we are, and so on. You know, what's so special about human beings? Well, of course, maybe special. We dominate the planet. I guess we're
right.
Special. But spirit is everywhere. It's in every piece of life, and I think, you know, as the Buddhists do, it should be honored as such. It's not really that different from us.
Right. Interesting, because, you know, on the program I did with Melissa Watts last week on Paranexus Universe, we were talking about this, and I'll probably bring it up again next week on this program, in terms of animals. She was talking about animals incarnating with, you know, their owners.
Yes.
You know, would kind of fall into your group thing. What do you think about that?
Well, absolutely. Pets are very, very attached. And, they come back to their owners, for sure. It worries me slightly because dogs, for example, have their own evolutionary path. It's not necessarily ours. But because we've made them pets, we've bound
them. Entangled.
Yeah, absolutely. They're bound to us, entangled with us. I don't know whether it's good for them or not, but it's not for me.
Well, I don't know. You would think it would be, because obviously there's a real connection there.
Mm.
Interesting. So, Mike, what's your message? What do you, I know you're doing your radio program. When is your radio program generally on? You want to tell our audience?
It's on Blog Talk Radio. It's Paranexus, and it's called Reincarnation, the Secret of Past Lives. It's got my name on it, of course. And it goes out at 3:30 Eastern Saturday afternoon.
On most Saturdays.
On, as you say, most Saturdays.
Yeah, most Saturdays. Okay. And then while I'm thinking about it, your book, Edward, can be obtained where?
http://www.edwardstafford.co.uk. Now, you can get it at Amazon, both sides of the Atlantic, north and south of the border. You can get it at the Book Depository and also Smashwords, because I've done it as an ebook.
Okay, Smashwebs, and I saw that, and it's pretty affordable. In fact, I think I saw it on Amazon with the ebook on. I know on Smashwebs is what, $2.99?
Yeah, that's right. If somebody twisted my arm, I'd probably give them a copy. But I think that, you know, it's such a price that nobody would notice it.
Yeah, well, $2.99 is nothing. So, all right. So, what's your message? What are you doing with all this? What do you want to get out to the world?
I think there are things that we haven't touched on, and perhaps that is something for another time. But there are things which transcend the current realities that we have, cross realities, pan reality things. There is something about the course of history and different realities. Now, because Edward Stafford did not prevent the Tudors' rule, the Reformation happened. The Reformation gave such an enormous boost to Christian Protestantism.
Mm-hmm.
That has completely changed the world, particularly because of the British Empire. But also, you look at America. I mean, the Reformation radically influenced the USA. Yeah. And so culture has been changed because Henry VIII wanted a divorce. And that's what it comes to. And I'm not sure that we have gone the way we should have gone.
So, is that your message? Is that what you're trying to get across?
I think it's something to be looked at. It's all very well to say, well, it would have been so and so and such if this or that hadn't happened. You know, people do this what-if stuff. The truth is, we don't really know, because spirit can organize things, but we're not very good at it. But I think it's something to look at. I think we could learn lessons and saying, maybe it wasn't such a good idea after all. Maybe we overlooked this or that possibility.
So what's next for you? What are you working on now, or what do you hope to accomplish?
Well, it's sort of related, and it's not quite from the same life, and it's not even reincarnation. It's more sort of general scrying. But with Edward, I came across how the princes in the tower were removed from the tower, and it wasn't by Richard III. It was by a bishop, John Morton. And he had a postgraduate school of magicians in Cambridge. And being Bishop of Ely, he controlled Cambridge University. And I think that's rather interesting, but it's a bit of a challenging minefield, because they were into magic and they set various traps. So I approach it, you know, sort of rather cautiously. But if I can set that out for the public, what happened to the princes in the tower, I'd rather enjoy doing that.
Cool. So is that going to be the subject of a book, I'm assuming?
Yes, but I'm going to do the research for it a little bit hesitantly. I had thought I might write it this summer, but so far I've not written more than about a chapter or so.
Yeah, it takes time and research.
It does.
Well, Mike, it's been a real pleasure having you on the program tonight. Really appreciate you staying up so late.
Not in the least. I really do appreciate the chance that you give me in talking to you. It has been a total pleasure.
And we'll have to reconnect and go over some of these other points you had on things on a future show, if you're willing.
That would be superb.
Well, sounds great. I appreciate your time staying up and all that, and I'm going to let you get on to sleepy time, and I'm going to move on with the rest of it.
Yes, indeed, and may I compliment you on your program and what you're doing?
Please do, profusely.
Totally brilliant. So good luck with the future shows.
Thank you so much, Mike. Have a great night. Sleep well.
You too.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, some excellent comments, some interesting concepts on reincarnation, past lives. Interesting stuff, and we'll explore it again in another week on the next week's show, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in just a moment. Before we wrap up this week's program, I would like to make a couple of announcements, or make one announcement, and then would like to do our sending positive thoughts and energy part. I'd like to make an announcement that I'm delighted to announce that Dr. Vicki Hunter has now been appointed to the MCHS Church Board of Directors, and she's going to be also teaching a course on the Metaphysics Institute coming up, which will be included as an elective in the degree program. So glad to have her on board. And of course, her show's coming up in just a moment. Also like to take a moment and send some positive energy and thoughts out to those who are struggling, who have a hard time. That could be you too. So if you'll join with me for just a moment, think about those, send some positive energy, some good thoughts, send a wave, and maybe it'll help them a little bit. Just for a moment here, I'll allow some silence. All right. Appreciate that. Sending that positive energy and thoughts, it can have an effect. That's actually been documented. So thanks for joining with me in that. Now, next. I'm looking forward to.
With Dr. Douglas Kelly. To learn more about the concepts presented in this program, visit mchschurch.com. To take a metaphysics course or to get your metaphysics degree, visit metaphysicsinstitute.com.
This is the MCHS Educational Network. Please visit us at mchschurch.org. This is Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective on the MCHS Educational Network. And now, Dr. Vicky Hunter.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective. Now, on this show, you can phone in. The number is on the screen right there on Blog Talk Radio, mchschurch.org, 714-459-3973. So if you have any questions, anything of interest, anything I can help out with, certainly I tune in and do my best. It's one of those things. I really like to tune in with people's birthdays. So if you even pull it up on the chat and if there's a question, then I'll do my best to answer as I can. I really enjoyed that show with Mike Voice and Doug Kelly on the reincarnation, and I'm noticing that there's already still chat about it in the chat room. And maybe later on, if anybody has any questions that they'd like to, you know, put, have a little experience in some of my own past lives also. I love that subject. I love it. And I love the discussion of it, and I love the theories of it, and it's very exciting. One of the other things that came up that Doug was mentioning earlier is about stress. And that was actually one of the things that I had thought of presenting this evening or talking about, is different ways of doing stress or managing stress, doing stress. We all do stress a little. People take yoga, meditation, self-hypnosis, various things to calm the mind, to calm the body, to get in touch with yourself, to center, stay grounded, breathe. Breathing is everything. We're going to do a little bit of that tonight too, if we have some minutes. But it's really about how do you calm, even in the snap of a finger when you need to, just to calm down, to breathe, to... You know, it's one of those things. A lot of the time, you know, we have situations with people in conversation, and it's later we say, geez, I wish I would have thought of saying that, or geez, how come I can't say things right away? Well, there is that pause, that space in there, that very often it's just if we step back for a moment, get back into ourselves, we can interact from a little bit more of an objective place. And I know in previous shows I've talked about that, the best we can do about objectivity. Of course, it's subjective no matter what we do, but it is to step back a little bit, just to step back from a situation and allow thoughts to flow better so we're present, we're in the moment. So there's three things in particular I thought that I might like to address today, and one of them is about calling your spirit back, and I'm going to explain that in a minute. And the other is breathing, and the other is about voice. So when I say about calling your spirit back, I really like to refer back to a moment when I was at an Aboriginal camp many, many years ago, and one of the elders, upon packing up the camp and before everyone was allowed to leave, he had put us through an exercise. He had said, which was brilliant, I hadn't thought of it that way before, but very often when people go home, they're still, part of them is still on holiday. So whenever you leave a place, you should take your entire spirit with you. So what he would do is we had to hold tobacco up to the sky and to each of the four directions call our own name out loud. So in every of the directions, out loud, that vibration. And it brought, it's very interesting, brought more energy back into the moment And it just centered each of us. But of course, the elder was clear to also say that we don't leave pieces of our spirit behind. So many, many years, as I sat with this, I found that, well, I think we leave pieces of ourselves everywhere, whether it's a past relationship, if we've lost somebody close to us, you know, we feel a little bit not ourselves or not whole or not quite with it. So one of the exercises I started doing, for myself especially, and I started working with my clients this way, is to call your own name out loud. Just casually sitting down in your chair to say your own name out loud and feel what that feels like. So any one of you, right where you are now, whether you're in chat room or you're at home listening, just call your own name out loud. What does it feel like? It's very interesting. The energy starts to change because that is your impression. That is your energy, your name. So in the event you're leaving a relationship and it's very difficult, perhaps it's just to imagine that individual's face in your mind and call your name out loud. You call your spirit back. And it works. Certainly it's effective. So you can find, Catherine just said in the chat room that it feels weird. That is perfectly normal because you're accumulating more of your energy. You're bringing your energy back to yourself. You're getting into your identity. It's all a part of being centered in yourself. So in my case, I would say Vicky, Vicky. And if you need to, say it really loud, right from your gut, way down inside, Vicky. Whew, you know, it just brings you right back. So I've applied this work to very many, many areas. And it's effective because you feel more yourself. Very, very effective for people who have lost someone, especially if it's a parent. And most difficult situation to deal with is when somebody's lost a child. But even then, your partner or, you know, somebody you've been very, very attached to, you don't want your part of yourself to go with them. You know, they are on the other side. They're okay. But you have to call yourself back. So that's an exercise. Now, breathing. Four breaths. Each one is deeper. This also helps you when you call your name out loud and you breathe. Like if you do just a natural sigh, it just only goes to your chest. That it's just a chest thing. So you want to go deeper. If you think four breaths, and each time that you take in a breath, you go deeper, hold it longer until it goes beneath the heart. You want the air to support the heart. So if you have that visual, you'll get deeper right into the diaphragm, way deep inside, to give oxygen and to fill your body up. Hold it and then let it go. But take your time with it. That's also a good way of centering. Now, once you've done that at home on your own a few times, wherever you are, no matter who you're with or the situation, you say your name in your mind, take a small breath, Vicky, whoa, and I come back to myself. So it is another way to stay present, stay in the moment, and not let stress take over. So I'm just going to check in the chat room here. There's a couple of comments asking, let me see. Sorry, you can take me off topic anytime, Catherine. Spirit guides. You wanted to ask me about spirit guides. It's a pretty wide question, so perhaps you want to narrow that down for me. I can ask in general. We always have spirits around us all the time. I don't necessarily think that there's one on assignment for an entire lifetime. I think some can come and go. So maybe if you have a moment, just to specify, you know, something that you wanted to know in particular, Catherine, that would be appreciated. Now, just noticing another comment. Not sure what that means, David, so I'm just going to let it be. If anybody has any questions, specific, hopefully, because I can just widen the whole topic and go on and on, and I really like to keep it focused. Do they come in your dreams to help you to understanding, is something that Catherine has asked. Absolutely. They will do whatever it takes to get through to you. Certainly they'll do whatever it takes to get through to me. I call it sometimes a cosmic 2x4, that, you know, I need a whack upside the head too. They'll come in our dreams. They'll come in the daytime. They'll give us signals. They'll tap us on the shoulder. We'll feel like our hair is being touched. Any number of things to get our attention. So if there's a particular message, then you're going to have to be clear. Here's the trick. We all have a brain file, and sometimes it doesn't coincide with what one of our you know, spirit friends is trying to get across. So again, that objectivity, it's saying, you got to help me out here because I don't get it that way. So is there some other way you can show me? Is there some other way that you can get through to me that my brain can translate? And, you know, once you ask that question, the information starts to come just a little bit differently. So Catherine was asking again, I was wondering if it was a spirit guide or a creation of my own unconscious mind. I don't know as it matters. See, this is where I think we can get too analytical. The more analytical we become, then the less open we become. Accepting it that whether it's your higher consciousness, unconscious, or a different entity, doesn't matter if the message is getting across. If you have gained something, learned something, and evolved in some way, then here's my view of it. I don't care what it was. I can maybe understand it later, you know, hindsight 2020. You know, I think when we're a little bit more removed from it, then we can, in retrospect, say, you know what, I think that was my higher self, my unconscious mind, perhaps. Because I've had this other feeling that's clearer about that might be a spirit guide. You see, you'll get to know yourself better. If you focus too much at the moment, then we can start to, we kind of screw it up, to be honest. That's truly when I have done it. Many years ago, you know, what was that? Who is that? What do you want? And it gets too hard. I think we just have to let it go with the flow and observe. You know, we're blessed with this really wonderful ability of observation and reasoning, but we don't need to have it in the moment. It can come over time. We acquire information, we accumulate it, we look for patterns. I'm a pattern freak. I want to know what repeats, what comes in certain ways. I get to know myself better. But I also see that something is replaying itself, and that's how I can study it. So, Catherine says in the chat room, I'm reading, I had a dream that there was a young girl, actually a native girl, who led me to a vision. Oh, I love those dreams. They're the best kind. And not necessarily because it's native, but when somebody comes to you and takes you into a vision, oh, wow. That's the feeling of we're never alone. We've always got those folks up there working on our behalf. Absolutely. I've had many vision dreams, many dreams. Very often if somebody asks me a question that I can't, like psychic on command sometimes doesn't work, particularly with certain kinds of questions. So I'll say, let me sleep on it. and I'll ask them, can you show me in a dream? And somebody will take me into a vision or take me into a place. So Camille is saying in here, in the chat room, adding to that, Native Americans have always been in my dreams, and come to find out both my great-grandmothers were Cree and Cherokee. There was a connection that I was unaware of until just recently. Well, Camille, that could be a DNA memory. Now, understand, spirit plus a body equals one whole mind. That is my view. So, excuse me, if we have spirit memory, let's say, from other lifetimes, or whatever spirit is bringing into this incarnation, it activates with an earth body that has its own memory, genetics that go right back to the beginning of time. So you have, in a way, two kinds of memories coming into one place. So it could very well be that you have had an awakening of your DNA memory, particularly by the mother's side, by the way. The maternal side is very powerful for memory. And you could be having that, so it would be, it, by the traditions of the old way, by the way, when it comes from your mother's side, then you would naturally call yourself of the Red Nations and wherever that comes from. So maybe we'll talk about culture some other time, but it just makes sense to me, Camille, that you would have that. But you could also be having past life memory. Okay, Sean, let's see here. I had a dream where the Archangel Michael came to my house to take me to the heavens. It was awesome. Okay. We translate information through our brain files. I think I said this in another show at another time, but I was telling a very dear friend of mine who's very much practicing Catholic that I had been visited by this wonderful woman spirit dressed in this blue dress, and she got so excited I thought she would jump through the phone. She said, oh, you got visited by the Virgin Mary. And I said, I hadn't thought about that, honestly, because my brain does not file to biblical individuals. I file more to some great mother, a clan mother, or, you know, an overseer mother. I hadn't thought of the Virgin Mary, but her mind filed to the Virgin Mary. That's fine. That's just the way she interprets. You believe you saw the Archangel Michael. You may have, but that's not to say it couldn't have been some other spirit showing you what the heavens look like. So you have to be very careful when we start labeling, because it's how our brain is filing. Okay, I have, tell me something about my birthday. And I'm not so sure that's a question, but let's see, 8/15/1979. This is an answer to number 35. Now, if I add up all those numbers and reduce them, then I can see that you're a birth path number of 4. 8/15/2011 says to me you're in a 9 year. So, number 35. You know, it's interesting that you were born in 1979 to boot. There was a lot of very interesting souls born in 1979, I tell you. It just seemed to be an influx of so many wonderful souls with great potential and awake souls, and they came with a lot of memory at that time. I do think we go through cycles. I really do. A number four birth path means you like changes, constant changes all the time, but you're in a year 9, so there's a lot of things that you need to fulfill this year. There's a lot of things that you need to, or you will anyway. It's just your approach, I hope, will be welcoming that think of it as wrapping things up in a way, because you got to get ready for it, starting things next year. So you really have to come to terms with everything that you've been working on, and I would say in the last 5 years. So lots of changes in the last 5 years for you, and I sense that, you know, it could be up and down, up and down. And now you need to get on a flow, so to speak. And I think you'll do that, provided in this year you're willing to wake up to everything that's been given to you to learn. Because you are one who's very resilient, provided you allow it to be resilient. People who are born with a four, it's a stop-start, and it's always changing, a curiosity. So you want to keep going with that. So dare to be individual, I guess, is something I really want to say to you. Don't try to mold and fit in. You got to dare to bring change to others, because you set that example of resilience. And in this year, coming to terms with that, next year it starts, it's a 1 year for you in the cycles, and you're ready to begin, like really start firing up and beginning new things. So I trust and hope that helped you out a little bit. I'm going to move on. Rebecca says, I need Vicky to tell me the name of the spirit who's here with me. Oh, come on, Becky. I don't know. It's hard for me to tune into spirits. I can tune to people more than I can spirits. And I'm just not that good on the internet, on Skype, and stuff. I know it happened before. Somebody had asked me about what the spirit was trying to say, but I could tune in. You know, I think it was you, Becky. You know, I can tune into you, but it's very, very difficult. You know, sometimes if I'm in a session, even on Skype, visual, I can feel better and connect better. And that's when I have a greater link. So I'm sorry I can't help you with that one. Okay, Catherine is making a comment here. Let's see. Just a comment or a question, Catherine. Your daughter asked me if you had any Native ancestry because of your deep connections to the earth. You know, I love that question, and you're really on the right track. We were all earth people, and Native, if you want to use what Native means, you know, people of the earth, we all began that way. Red, yellow, black, white, we were all tribal people. We are earth people. So that you have these wonderful, we have these wonderful connections to the earth, and that you're practicing it, I think is wonderful. I am just going to say, is it true that all guides show themselves the way our minds will perceive them? Or the way they think our minds will perceive, they'll do their best. Let me just, I'm just going to think about that one for a minute, John, because I have dialogue with, you know, my invisible friends all the time. And perhaps maybe I can say this to you. I had a wonderful old ancient man come to me, a mountain man, once, and he was teaching me to play a flute. And I love music. I just have, and I know how to read music. It's painfully hard for me, though. And I don't have the memory, the capacity to remember tunes like a lot of other people can by ear. So I said to him, you're going to have to help me out with this, because I don't remember things very well that way when they're played. So he said, key of A. I went, oh, okay, no, I got it. And as soon as I remember an A, the chord A, the key A, I remember the chant. So I have this dialogue, and I don't hesitate to just ask, and just like a conversation I would have with you, just ask so that they can help you out. Sometimes I'm as thick as a brick because I say, you know, I don't get it. You're going to have to show me another way. But I don't anxiety over it. It's the patience with yourself as much as it's patience with them. And sometimes when they think that, you know, you got to get this, and I'll just say, look, you know, I can't do it today. I need to sleep. And they're patient. Just the same way we try to interact with human people, I interact with invisible people much the same way. Because they're my friends. They're just my friends with no body. That's the way I see it. I don't necessarily call them guides. I don't necessarily call them, what you know, my angels. I mean, you can if you want to. They don't care. That's just not how I relate to it. If you ask, then they will show themselves in a way you can perceive them as much as possible. Okay, Becky is saying, I rarely remember my dreams. That's common to go through times. For the grace of age, Becky, I want to tell you, if I go through a cycle where I'm not dreaming, I'm really happy. Because I know that when it comes, it's going to come big. And, you know, I think it's pretty normal to go through even a year or two of not dreaming very much or not remembering your dreams. Because you're active out there. You're just not conscious to bring that information back all the time. So if you're going through a cycle, that's okay. Don't worry about it, because when it comes, it will come. I think I kind of got lost in something here that was asked, something else that's mentioned in chat. So I'm going to move on for a little bit, because I would really like to encourage you to practice something with the voice. Ah, tricky. I'm really, you know, I was very young when I had to study theater, and I wasn't because I was wanting to act. I loved the mechanisms of theater. I loved the backstage. I loved building costumes and set design and management and the writing of it. So that was my affinity and 5 years in theater. And I had some, back in the day, I had some brutal voice teachers. I went on to do television and radio, and I tell you, that was amazing education that I brought with me. There's an experiment that each of you can do for yourselves, much like we were talking earlier about the breathing, calling your spirit back. If you want to make different sounds, resonating, I'm going to try to do this, and I'm hoping it's going to come across okay on the microphone, but everyone can relate to a nasal kind of sound. You know, it's kind of nasally. You know, I'll pinch my nose for a moment here. The nasally kind of sound where people talk through their nose. Well, you can actually raise that up and talk through it in the top of your head, where everything's way up here at the top of your head. And it's a resonating that kind of goes, you can feel it on your scalp, actually. Then there's a throat sound. Everything comes from the throat. It's a very airy kind of, but it's kind of stuck. And then there's, of course, there's the chest sound, where it's a little more from here, or it's a sound that moves. You can actually feel the energy of the air coming from deep, again, under the heart, from the diaphragm. So you can practice now these different sounds and where they all come from. My experience in observing people is a lot of people live the neck up. And it's very difficult to find your voice. People have a hard time finding their voice. They talk in a whisper. They don't want to be heard too much. Or they're, you know, some people are deaf and don't know it, and they're really loud. And I always find that interesting, too. Knock you off your chair. But it's working with the tones. Some people do it with singing. If you can you know, belt it out in a tune a little bit and play with it, But the speaking, so if you're in your car, walking around your house, I know people think you're kind of crazy to talk to yourself, but find the voice so that when you speak to people, it's from way deep in your center. I've become very sensitive to people. I can even look at somebody and know where they're living from or what. Yes, Doug, talking to yourself is crazy. That's funny. Sorry, it just came up in chat. Anybody listening to this in the archives? Just a little giggle that came out there. What I was saying is I can see where people are living, like from their head, if they're living straight from the heart, or if they're really living deep inside their body, if you're comfortable in your body, who you are. And then how you speak, how you present yourself, the tones you make, how your voice moves. And it's a practicing that you're going to interact and communicate better with others. Certainly, you're going to communicate with yourself better because you're coming from your center. So again, those three kinds of things that you can play with, that you can work with, call your spirit back. That's calling your name out loud. Breathing. In through the nose, out through the mouth, by the way. And then the voice, wherever the voice is coming from. And I can always feel the vibration in my body when it's way down in here. I can also tell when I'm just struggling. And it's again, feel it. You will get to know yourself that much more by doing those three things. Call your spirit back. That's saying your name out loud. Breathing, four breaths, each one deeper, hold it, relax, exhale, and play with your voice. Again, talk to yourself, answer yourself if you must. I have this habit of thinking I've said it out loud, but I haven't, because didn't I say that? Because I have conversations in my mind or my head with my invisible people. And so I think that I've said it out loud. That's where tones and vibration and feeling it in my body is so important when I've spoken out loud. I find it helpful to read sometimes out loud because the eye will flutter and I make these little errors if I'm tired in particular. So all those things that we get to know about ourselves better. But we're spirit joined with a body. We have to be in the body. I'm going to tell you, I really worked on this hard. And I'll share something with you about myself. I was the fat kid in the community. I was that little fat kid. I was the one everybody picked on. And my weight fluctuated up and down, up and down, up and down my entire life. Until a number of years ago, I decided to have a relationship with my body. I needed the body to talk to me. And I needed to have this experience with being in that physicality. So there's a couple of things that I did do to get to know my body. Is I got on the scale every morning, and then I would take an inventory of what I've eaten. And the body would tell me if that's something that was agreeable or not. So if it wasn't agreeable, then I'd know that's something that I can't have, or for how long. So I started to find external things so that I could better listen to the body, because my brain didn't know how. We all think we know what the body's doing. We do not, until we begin to have a relationship with it. And it hugely increased my sensitivity to other people. Because if we have all these walls up, then nobody can come in, and we certainly can't go out. So it was getting into the body and having that body talk to me. So as I got to know what the body could and could not eat, I also learned how it felt. I learned how I felt with emotion. I learned how emotion just filtered right through my body and resonated, which brings us back to what we were talking about very earlier and what Doug mentioned in the earlier show about stress and how stress manifests. If anybody said something that I felt hurt by, because I don't show that very well to other people, and particularly in my work, you know, however I feel doesn't matter because I am with the individual, so I don't take it to heart. But once in a while, there'll be something said. People don't mean to, maybe. It's hurtful. So I find that I tense up, and I felt my body getting bigger. And I realized that with anything that felt stressful or hurtful, that my body had a message to get big and strong. Now, that might work for men, but it doesn't work for women. So I had to really, you know, take some lessons in that and say, you need to feel big and strong. So there was times in my life where I would gain weight breathing air. I mean, I didn't know how that worked, breathing air. And, you know, I'd gain 5 pounds in a day, which is really interesting. It was frustrating. And there's all the psychologies and the emotions that go with that. But the body was reacting in a way I didn't understand. So I had to understand it. So from very early childhood, I had this response. It's a survival mechanism. It's a response mechanism. No matter what, doesn't matter what happened, doesn't matter. I had power today to change this. I had power to talk to my body, to have a relationship with my body and say, body, I got it. Now, you don't have to be big to be strong. I got it. Breathe. As I got to know that body, my sensitivity increased. So how wonderful is that, this journey of self-knowledge, the journey of having that relationship with yourself and with spirits and with others. I mean, it goes on and on. How can a day not be interesting, you know, because you're learning something? And it's the study. Again, the objectivity, don't take it to heart. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing. How can I take that to heart? So I noticed that John just mentioned in there, know and love thyself. You know, I'm with that program, John. But if love is like in a small little tiny golf ball, and that's the only kind of love we know, that's the only kind of love we are going to perpetuate. It's the only kind of love that we're going to move forward. We have to know that love is a universe. Well, what's a universe if I don't understand the golf ball or the badminton ball or the other ball? I have to get to know it. So I'm going to get to know what that is to expand it. So you know what? I can throw baseball. I can throw a softball. I can even, you know, play with the basketball now and again. Because love has very, very many different expressions. And love here is conditional. So how much am I loving myself? I don't know. Until I know me, then I can't love me. I can only give away what I have. I can only share with others what I know. And I want to be conscious about it, and that's the journey, to continually be more conscious. And the body is a critical part of consciousness. It's a really important part of being in the body to fulfill this experience. So I really hope, I've noticed a few people making comments in the chat room that's triggering something for you, and I'm really glad, because it's still, a lot of people think, well, you know, the body is just the body and it doesn't matter, and it does matter, because illness will manifest. Now, we each have a predisposition to, I think, weaknesses as we come into this lifetime. We have things we got to learn about. We'll also have this lifetime that will trigger things that we have no idea about. We can't know what that is. I will share an interesting story. This is probably one of the most impactful moments I had of my life. My brother shot himself in November of 1985. Now, he survived the actual shooting, but I went to the hospital, and the surgeon said, he needs surgery. We need to take off the limb and we need to ask your permission. And in that moment, I closed my eyes, and I spoke with my brother's spirit, and I said, you can't do this to me. You can't give me the responsibility of your life. I reject this. I refuse it. And I looked at the surgeon, and I said, you decide. You do what you want. You do what you think is best. And, of course, I'm a wreck. I mean, this is a hugely big event and crisis. My brother died on the table. And it, as you can imagine, there was a whole fallout from that. Within a month, I had pelvic inflammatory disease that two rounds of tetracyclines didn't cure. Within 3 months, I was diagnosed with cervical uterine cancer. And the story goes on from there. But what I had to realize is that in a moment of time, my body went into shock. But the disease, the shock manifested into the reproductive organs about giving life. When I was doing my healing, my naturopathic healing, and the journey after, to take back my power and get to know me, I went back to that moment in time that I rejected the responsibility of his life. And if there is such a thing as forgiving oneself, then that's what I did. And I had a different conversation with him. I brought time forward, not necessarily going back to relive it, but to experience the moment with him and his spirit to say, you will do what you will. And I accept that, and I accept responsibility for my part and whatever happens from here. I could heal at all levels. And it's one of the reasons that I believe, you know, that I'm more than 25 years cancer free. I was never afraid of cancer coming back again. You know, there's a couple of things where doctors put scares in your head, or, you know, other people will, you know, wake up fear. I didn't fear it. I really didn't. I knew that at all levels I had to heal myself, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. There was a moment in time that something went out of whack. I had to plug those wires back in. I had to reclaim myself, reclaim my spirit. Of course, this could be a discussion, and it's only brought up to understand how the body, you know, feels everything, reacts to everything we think, everything we feel. The body will have its own chain reaction. So we can begin by understanding what the body's doing, to get in the body, experience it, and tell the body, you know, if you're tired today, we can lay on the couch. But you know what, body, I think we can have a little talk today. We're going to get out and go for a walk. I actually talk to my body like very objectively, because I see it as the house I'm visiting, and it's a, hey, body, you and me, we're in this deal. So let's get connected. And there's lots of days that we don't feel as well as. There's lots of days that we feel better. So we have a relationship with that body, spiritually in your body, mentally, emotionally, and being connected. I noticed that Catherine has a question in there. Once you came to terms with the concept that you don't have to be big and strong, did you actually physically change? Yeah, I stayed a size 6, but 135 pounds ever since. I gave it a 2-year program. Catherine, I set out a thing. I was not, Catherine lost a brother too. I understand, Catherine. here we go. You know, it's, I think the thing about losing a sibling, and I'm going to address this with you, Catherine, it's as fresh today as it was back then, because that's somebody you had your childhood with. That's those very precious, special moments that we share the innocence with. There's a very strong bond and a connection when you lose a sibling. I also raised my brother, so if that feeling came even close to what it is for people who have lost a child, I never want to know it. I never want to know it anyway. But my heart's with you, certainly. It's a trip. I'm at peace, that he's at peace, and it's all right. So we're just having a moment together here, and I'm totally with you. I tell you, there's some pains. This is my philosophy, Catherine, and for anybody else who's listening, I really resent it when some people say, get over it. I don't like that. I don't think anybody needs to get over anything. I think what we do is we learn to live with it. You know, there's some pains that never go away. It's not supposed to. You know, how can, if to remember someone we have lost, we're going to remember equally that they're not here. So the joy and pain go together. It's the fullness of that experience. So I don't deny myself the pain of that. I just learn to live with it. So I think it was for about 15 years, actually, and I wasn't even keeping tabs. I would find myself driving in my vehicle, and I'd start crying for, I didn't think any reason. I'd say, what am I crying about? Oh, wait a minute. And, I know what day this is. And it would always be on the anniversary of his passing. So, yes, Catherine just mentioned some siblings. We have an actual spiritual connection with that's greater and harder. And, yes, absolutely. I'm with you there, Catherine. It's just like people. You know, some people you meet and you're so connected. Other people, it just doesn't matter. I think one of the funniest things that is people say they should like all kids. Well, I don't like all kids. So I don't care what size of body they're in. Sometimes, we just don't connect. And yet other little people, you know, I say, oh, wow, I really feel a connection with this one. So, but yes, siblings especially. So if you're spiritually connected, and you've shared childhood memories, you bet. That's, it's huge. And it's layered with so many things. But we are here, and we move forward. And we remember everyone who's impacted us, everyone who has helped to create us. So we decide what we're going to do with that, of course. And but they did contribute to who we are. And this is where I absolutely believe in the power of recreation. These things don't define us, but they certainly support our creation. We decide. Any kind of event, and I'm not comparing it necessarily to a loss of a loved one right now, but when we have critical experiences in our lives, impactful experiences, where, let's say, we've been victimized in a particular way, I view these things much like a virus. So you get the flu. Well, you want to heal from the flu. And you don't try to get rid of the flu. You want to speed up the healing process of the flu. So yes, we're going to go into crisis. We're going to feel a certain way. We're going to think a certain way. We're going to go through the process of it, but let's get through it so that I define. I want to get through it. I don't want to have the flu forever. I don't want to have that virus. I want to know about healing and rising above and being a part of something extraordinary that's built up my immune system, because I think that's exactly what we're doing. I don't get flu shots because I don't necessarily think I need to do that. I want to build up my own body. I want to build up my own immune system. I don't want to stop something from happening. I want to embrace it, and I want to challenge things head on. I want to move through that. That's part of rising up. That's evolution. It does not define us. We define us. But all these things contribute to how we can make choices and how we recreate, how we want to be in the world. I look back at my life and any of the situations that have arisen, Yes, I have been victimized, but I'm not a victim. I refuse. They cannot have my mind. They cannot have my spirit. That's what gets me through it all. That's what makes me go forward. I have my mind. I have my spirit. You know, somebody can hit me with a 2x4, but that's just, I got it. I can have that relationship with my body. I have that relationship with my mind. That's empowerment. That's self-creation. So again, part of calling our spirit back, I know of what I speak. You know, I will share this. I was blessed that day that my brother crossed over. I demanded, after they had told me he was deceased, I demanded to be with him. And I don't know why. I had this overwhelming anxiety attack. Not just grief at loss, but I had to be with his body. I had to. And I was kind of a crazy woman, actually, and they were a little afraid of what I might do. But I got to go into this little room with him, and it was like he was waiting for me. And I put my left hand on his heart and my right hand by his head, and I watched what I believe is his spirit leave his body. He blessed me with that. He was waiting for me to have that experience with him. I've seen a lot of things in my life, but never anything that was that extraordinary, or the feeling of that kind of love, that kind of altered state. Yes, it was quite brilliant, as Doug has just mentioned, a shared death experience. And I think he knew, because he and I had often talked. I had died when I was 5. I had drowned, and I had left my body. So he and I had that connection always of these little stories and knowing a lot of things about each other. So it was like he was waiting, and we were telepathically communicating. I believe that. So there's so many things. How can I be sad about something that I was gifted with? I'm sad that he's not here, you know, having a coffee and, you know, coming over for dinner. But he is, really. I have a lot of stories about him since he's left, actually. It's really amazing. He always comes when he has something to look out for and warn me about. Or, you know, he always looks after my children. Always, when my children were growing up, I said, hey, you know that you can always call your uncle if you're ever scared. If you need any help, you just call your uncle. And they've always lived very comfortably knowing he's always there for them. And he is. So we're nearing the end of the show. We did take the full hour today. Thank you very much, Dr. Doug. I really enjoyed this show. And I hope you have also and gained something from it about who we are and continuing to grow. Oh, Becky just said in the chat room she drowned as well. We will have to talk. Let's do that on our next show, shall we? We'll talk about people who've had these near-death experiences, because it does change your life. I call us those who live on, I call it rented time, actually. But we're on borrowed time. So again, thank you very much, everybody, for joining into the chat room. And we will absolutely see you, or talk to you next week. So tell your friends about us. Hopefully we can get some more people, expand the audience. Thank you very much. I'm so glad to be a part of MCHS Church and look forward to a very long relationship. Thanks very much. Good night, everyone.
We're clear. No, we're not.
I'm logged out.
Hold on.